We acknowledge the Whadjuk people and the wider community, wider Noongar community on whose country we conduct our ceremonies and our zazen tonight. May the spirit of the Buddha be present in our words and in our activity tonight. All things are under the law of change. They are a dream, a phantom, a bubble, or a shadow. They are like dew or a flash of lightning. You should contemplate like this. How is it that all these things that change are unchanging? Please sit comfortably. Tonight's talk arose out of a discussion which we had on precepts a week or two ago. All things are under the law of us. The only unchanging law is the law of change. And we had a really rich discussion, and that's what generated tonight's talk. So we owe the title of this talk, which is the only unchanging law is the law of change, to the Greek philosopher Heraclitus, who lived approximately 500 BC. He's a contemporary of the Buddha. The central ideas of Heraclitus' philosophy were the unity of opposites. Look, most of this sounds so Zen Buddhist. I mean, the Taisho is all here in Heraclitus, living in Greece. The central ideas of his philosophy were the unity of opposites. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness, exactly form. He saw the world as constantly in flux. And he expressed this by no person ever steps into the same river twice, for fresh waters are always flowing in upon you. He speaks to our experience of change. This is very strong, in Western culture, as it is in Chinese, Indian, Buddhist philosophy. In his poem, The Ballad of the Ladies of Times Past, the poet François Villon, who lived in the 15th century and was reputed to be a vagabond and a thief, penned this poignant refrain. Where are the snows of yesteryear? Where are the autumns of yesteryear? Joseph Heller, in his celebrated novel Catch-22, has his protagonist Yossarian haunted by his memories of the death of his friend, the tail gunner, Snowden. He changes Vion's refrain to, where are the Snowdens of yesterday? Yeah. Where are those that we have loved and who've died? Returning to Heraclitus, you know, this impermanence, the endless flow, the flux, he immediately—that's what he's famous for. You know, this gets endlessly quoted. You never step into the same river twice, because fresh water's always flowing in upon you. But within the same, near the same fragment, he says, we step and we do not step. We are and we are not. Almost in the same breath. And this is very much the spirit of the Zen way. We step and we do not step. How do you indicate we do not step? Bit of creaking here. Oh. There's also that. Who heard it? Who was hearing? So we step summons up the world of contingency, of impermanence, birth and death, advancing and retreating. We do not step evokes the timeless realm where there is no birth, no death, no advancing or retreating, and neither courage nor trepidation. We are pays tribute to our uniqueness, our singularity. I talk to my granddaughters, and it's funny what comes because it feels so fresh with them. And I say, there's no person who's identical to you anywhere. oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Then I'd kind of say, well, you know, you are not bounded by your skin and your skull. At the same time, you are not bounded by your skin and your skull. Oh. So, yeah, we are and we are not. And what I say over and over again when working with movement, that there is not a breath between them. Not a breath between those two positions. I mean, they sound like polarities, you know, extremes. But actually lived what we think of as the paradoxes or contraries, to use William Blake's expression, all dissolve. Those distinctions dissolve within our least breath in taking a step, in opening your eyes at dawn, in closing your eyes at night. Nothing blocks. With the deepening of the way, the contraries of our life are also held, and I'm talking about real contraries and difficulties here. Jacob Beck has this vivid expression. He talks about she talks about a bigger container. So sometimes the difficult, the things that we feel conflicted about are there, but they're held in something much larger. Unopened space. The Buddha talked about three signs of existence. Impermanence as the cause of suffering and the path from suffering to liberation. And that is summed up in the expression no self, which is what we're touching here. It's very fashionable these days in various Buddhist traditions to focus on impermanence and suffering and to kind of palliate the rest of the situation. But actually, the deep work of realizing no self is its own healing. So he says, we step and we do not step. we are and we are not. So the koan, which I announced at the beginning, all things are under the law of change. They are a dream, a phantom, a bubble or a shadow. They are like dew or a flash of lightning. You should contemplate like this. How is it that all these things that change are unchanging? It comes from a koan from early in the koan syllabus called Yuhiho. Things for the beginning and an end. And it quotes, the quote comes from the end of the Diamond Sutra, which is one of the Prajnaparamita Sutras, which are the foundation of Mahayana Buddhist philosophy. Prajnaparamita means perfection of wisdom, and the sutras counted as Prajnaparamita Sutras, which includes the Diamond Sutra, present the perfection of wisdom as the realization or direct experience of shunyata, emptiness. The Diamond Sutra itself is the earliest dated printed book. It's also the first known creative work with an explicit public domain dedication, because that in its colophon at the end, it states that it was created for universal free distribution, which is really beautiful. Not so much a commercial deal. This moment is mysterious, arising from unknown depths. We don't know in advance what it will be, and it doesn't come marked as past, present, or future. Just like today didn't come marked as Thursday. It will never come again. Moreover, we don't know what the next moment will be. Our remembering unfolds now, our planning unfolds now. Our reflections on the past, as well as those on the future, unfold now, which is to say, in this moment. Our whole life gathers as this very moment. This moment holds your birth and your death. It holds the birth and death of stars. Yet it is also fleeting. Yeah, what are the boundaries of the moment? Already gone. Next moment. This image of fleeting, it's like eggs at home. You know? Each morning I get up and Antoinette has prepared a salad, and my cooking repertoire extends to making a couple of eggs sunny side down. And I go to my egg carton, and there were six the other day, but there's only two today. So the impermanence of eggs is really strong in my household. As is cat food, you know. Possum is eating me out of house and home. You know, it's like, oh my God. So it's off to the supermarket for her. And for me. So impermanence of eggs and cat food. It's not just Heraclitus's waters that flow in afresh. You yourself are ever-changing and in constant flux. Every 16 days, about 72% of our bodily atoms are replaced. Whatever or whoever you conceive yourself to be, you are adrift in a sea of change. You are indeed that sea of change. Even though we operate from a core conception of ourselves, thinking we know perfectly well who we are a network of relations with others and with the world at large that is in constant flux. childbirth and the months of sleeplessness that may follow over time are blessedly forgotten or may at least be hard to summon up. So much of our experience is like this. Even intense intimacy such as we experience through meditation, making love, being in nature, or listening to music ends up in that soft avalanche into oblivion, or what my fellow Zen teacher Arthur Wells calls the forgettery. Norman Fisher writes, "As far as classical Buddhism is concerned, impermanence is the number one inescapable and essentially painful fact of life. It is a singular existential problem that the whole edifice of Buddhist practice is meant to address. To understand impermanence at the deepest possible level and to merge with it fully is the whole of the Buddhist path. The Buddha's final words express this: impermanence is inescapable. Everything vanishes, therefore there is nothing more important than continuing the path with diligence." What is it to continue the path with diligence? Be there for what is. What's happening right now? Engage the moment. Unite with the object of your attention. Then who are you? In the quote from the Diamond Sutra from earlier, all things are under the law of change. They are a dream, a phantom, a bubble or a shadow. They are like dew or a flash of lightning. Then comes this injunction. You should contemplate like this. This is very interesting. How do you contemplate like this? Completely there for what is. Painful, pleasant, no matter. When it's like that, your true nature is not hard to find. You know, in the face of this, in the face of impermanence being the number one inescapable and essentially painful fact of life, Georgia O'Keeffe writes, "A flower is no less beautiful for lasting only a day." If there were no death, what would happen to life on this strange and beautiful planet? You know, impermanence has its beauty and its poignancy. We may long for permanence, but impermanence intimates and evokes love. Even in the face of the loss of it. My mother used to say, and my father indeed, "You can't stop progress." This is post-war, you know, 1940s, 1950s. A period of relative stability, at least in Western Australia. White goods television, black and white television, colour television. It's also last century, isn't it? So they say, you know, you can't stop progress. And I remember joining protests against the building of the tunnel under Northbridge. We feared the damage underground, the flooding, but we were also opposed to the demolition of parts of Northbridge and its impact on its older inhabitants. In this regard, I remember the gentleman who was named the Birdman. And I wrote a little poem for him. "With your white head, full back's paws asleep on your knees, you looked like someone who'd been interviewed once too often. that look would cut off my tongue as I passed you seated on Monty's Burgers low brick wall, warmed by early morning sun, eyeing your house across Lake Street, bricks rubbed raw as a fresh graze, veranda posts like split pegs, bullnose encrusted with pigeons you fed each afternoon. Evenings you heard their claws scrape as they settled deeper into your rusting roof. They say your front room was plastered with 30 years of agent's office. You'd paste another up, then return to sit on the front step with your ancient ghetto blaster. La Traviata, the woman who must shortly die, tottering towards us, scooping out her heart like a dark-fleshed mango, while the Liberal government bent on gouging a tunnel under your place to the old St. Bridget's School, offered you just enough to finally make it worth your while. You feared the tunnel, but they could have your dump. And the money? You reckoned it would well and truly see you out. I doubt you ever got a cent. Someone, perhaps your son, is packing your fishing rod and boxes, spilling rusty drill bits, old yellow newspapers, forks. In light that's beer-coloured, then freezing brown, the Arcadia Hotel's blunt arrow nose points to where your heart attacked you, stopped you dead, but not your falcon. Wheel on full lock, it steered through Lulba Cafe's wrought iron fence, a veering chopper blade, jaggedly spitting brick and iron, till hard against the toilet wall, it howled the mad reveille of your going out. You never knew what felled you, yet you barely fell, just tilted stiffly forward, still almost upright amongst the startled pigeons. Nothing lasts, including us. We're all just for the time being. Nothing is permanent, not even our problems. This isn't solely a personal consideration, it's also a shared one. Nothing lasts, and we're all in it together, as Robert Aitken wrote. The fact that our lives are finite suggests that we should make the most of the time we have, even though we mostly don't know how much that is. Finding time to love and to express our love, finding time to finish business, to seek forgiveness and to forgive, to create while there is time. And if we fail to do any of this, Joko Beck wrote, I love these lines of Joko's, everyone is doing their best, she writes. Even the most wretched life, a life that seems to abjectly fail, cut short by drug abuse or dealing, still embodies the vastness, graces the planet. Everyone is doing their best. Thank you.